Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to tonight's Hidden Sparks Without Walls presentation. My name is Alicia Huss, and I'm the Director of School Services at Hidden Sparks and host for tonight's webinar. I'm grateful that we have Sarah Gordon with us this evening to discuss From Text to Experience, bringing experiential education into your Judaic Studies classroom. As always, throughout the presentation, we encourage you to contribute your comments and questions via the chat. If you'd like the whole group to see your comments, please be sure to chat to everyone. Otherwise, you can direct your questions just to me to have your questions addressed. A full recording of tonight's webinar will be available in about a week. We'll let you know when it's posted and you can share it with friends and colleagues. While I introduce Sarah, please pop your location in the chat so we can see where everyone is zooming in from. Sarah Gordon is the Director of Unpacked for Educators, a division of Open Door Media where she empowers educators worldwide to teach about Israel and Judaism with nuance and confidence. Previously, Sarah served as the Director of Israel Guidance and Experiential Education at Maynard High School, where she taught Talmud, chaired a course on contemporary Israel, and brought her vision and creativity to a wide range of school programs. Sarah spent 2 years studying Yeshiva University's GPATS program and holds dual master degrees in Jewish education and modern Jewish history from Yeshiva University, where she is currently pursuing her doctorate as a Wexner Fellow. Sarah lives in Teaneck, New Jersey, with her husband Nafi Schwartzberger and their three children. Sarah, the floor is yours.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I hope everyone is doing well. Thank you so much to Rabbi Huss and to Hidden Sparks for inviting me to come and present this evening. This is really a topic that I'm very excited about, a topic that I'm very passionate about, something that I've spent a lot of time, I would say, tinkering with, failing forward with, and experimenting with. And I'm very excited to be able to share some of my learnings with all of you tonight. And to really make this an interactive experience, I feel like it's hard to come in and present about From Text to Experience, bringing experiential education into your Judaic Studies classroom. Ideally, this should be, a meta experience. I'll be trying to have an experience together. Not sure that's going to work exactly through Zoom. So instead, we'll have more of different interactive discussions. I'm going to try to share as many practical units and examples as I can. And obviously, there will be time for reflection and for us to think a little bit about what we want to take from this presentation and really try and experiment with in our own classrooms and with our own students. So with that, I want to talk a little bit about our goals for tonight. And again, Rabbi Huss read my bio, and I'll say that, my first foray really into Jewish education was in camp. I spent many years in Camp Stone growing up as an educator. And that was really, I think, as someone who, when I was a student, didn't particularly enjoy school, that was the first time that I was given an opportunity to really tinker with education, to think about how this could be something that could be brought to life and could really help students think and experience and learn in different ways. And then when I kind of took the next step into formal education, spending many years at Maayanot Yeshiva High School, that was kind of the next challenge of when you have the rigor and you have the seriousness of formal education, how do you now bring in the experiential? How do we now kind of combine almost the best of both worlds, perhaps, of informal education and formal education without sacrificing anything on either side? And that's kind of one of the challenges I want to explore together tonight. So here's kind of our formal goals that I'd like us to be starting with. Number one, I want to explore the opportunities and challenges of applying experiential education to Judaic studies. So we'll have a chance to do that as a group and to really reflect on that. And I think not only how this can be helpful, but really what's holding us back from doing this? What are the challenges? And how can we kind of lean in to those challenges, explore them, break them down, and think about how we can make them more manageable? Number two, I want to look at research and kind of see also that there's a formal research element that pushes us towards being more experiential in our classroom. I want to identify some of the best practices for success. How can we make sure we can do this in a way that's going to work, that's going to feel successful, that's going to meet our goals as educators? And as always, I want to share practical, relevant examples that are classroom ready that you could use. I don't want to say tomorrow, but maybe in a week you'll be able to apply them and to really think of how we can scale these up and down in our own learning. And obviously, we'll have time for Q&A as well. Before we jump into the actual learning, I want to invite you all to post in the chat how you would define experiential education. I'd love to start with that. We'll give everyone a moment. I'm going to open the chat on one of my screens over here. How would you define experiential education? And this is where we model wait time as well, giving everyone a few minutes to reflect and to post in the chat. All right, so I see acting out, right? Perhaps a role play, perhaps, putting on some sort of play experience. Great. I see her. Great. Julie wrote, similar to project-based learning, definitely a lot of overlaps, I think, between the two over here. One example, actually, I didn't bring, but maybe I'll mention it later on, of some PBL, project-based learning, I've done in my class as well. Applying learning through activities. I love that as well. Okay, great. We have, wow, a lot more coming in. Hands-on learning, interactive, relatable, giving the kids material to dialogue, right? Pair and share, also a great example. Education with an active component. Love that also, right? We don't want them to just be the passive recipients of information. We want them to be actively involved in their own learning, right? Learning through doing, connecting through experience, using a variety of modalities. I need like a family feud board, right, of everything I'm going to talk about later, and we'll just kind of check it off as everyone lists these in the chat. So amazing. Right, learning by doing, reflecting is going to be very, very key. Excellent. We're going to speak about that a lot. And doing. Awesome. So I'm seeing a lot of really common denominators in everyone's definitions. And here I'm going to, really post a quote here from the Rebbe himself, right, from John Dewey over here, about experiential education. And really here's definition is all genuine education comes about through experience. There actually is a longer version of that quote where, he makes it clear that not every experience is going to invite learning. And I think it's important for us to name that as well. Like you can't just, have an experience and that's it. We checked the box. We did things that were experiential. We'll talk a lot about intentionality tonight as well. But really, that experiential education is learning through experience. It's reflection and it's application. I think as a few people really mentioned in the chat, it's not passive content delivery, right? You're not just having the student sit there and receive information, but they're really an active partner in the learning. And I wanted to share, and with this, we'll kind of use a different modality over here that I like to use in some of my presentations, which is Mentimeter. People might be familiar with it. And I want to ask a question, and what you're going to do is you're going to take a device, you're going to scan this QR code, and it's going to take you to a screen on Mentimeter, which I'll share in a second, where you can post your responses. And now that we've defined experiential education, right, being an active participant, learning through doing, I'm curious now when we think about it through the lens of Judaic studies, what are the challenges and opportunities of bringing this type of learning, this experiential education, to a Judaic studies classroom? So everyone can take a moment. You can. Oh, that's a good question. Can I share a link? Well, actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch over here to this slide. I'm going to share it. And what you can do is you can go to, I'm just going to let the, here we go. You can go to menti.com and you can use the code up here. Maybe Rabbi has, if you want to post it in the chat, if people need it, 5698667. And that should allow you to post. And we'll give everyone a minute. Okay, right. And again, we're looking for challenges and opportunities. You can put one, you can put the other, you can do both. So I'm seeing over here, right? Teachers don't know how to do this. And we'll talk about that, right? It's not something that perhaps is in everyone's comfort zone to do or in everyone's toolbox to do. And we'll have a chance to discuss this. All right, assessment and accountability. Great. We're going to talk about that also. I like to talk about the misconceptions a little bit of experiential education. We'll give a minute here for more of the answers to flow into the screen. So we've talked already. I've seen some of the challenges that people are posting over here. Teachers don't know how to do this, right? Assessment and accountability. How do we make sure, when it's a formal traditional classroom, we're learning a text, we have a test, or we have some sort of formal assignment, and that's how we know that it was learned. And there's accountability, there's a certain seriousness to the learning. So if we're just playing a game or we're doing something experiential, how is there going to be accountability, right? Challenges. Seems so long ago, not relevant, language of texts, right? So kind of the, well, it's interesting here, I guess, whoever posted, if you want to kind of expand a little bit in the chat, right? But it sounds, kind of like the challenges of how to bring Judaic studies to life, right? And this is perhaps like a good lens, a good opportunity, a good tool to use experiential learning to bring that in. Challenges, right? How do we focus on skills? Always the elephant in the room is we're very limited with our teaching time, right? It might not feel something comfortable, amazing, time, right? In some synagogues, the curriculum is forced, meaning you don't really get to choose what you're teaching, what you're not teaching. I love this one, right? Debate Socratic seminar with text, how we can get original in that idea. I'm seeing another option for time, right? On one hand, sometimes games can bring students in, experiential learning can make it seem exciting. Sometimes we have a bunch of teenagers sitting there with their arms crossed, right? And we're nervous a little bit. They're going to think it's childish. They're not going to want to engage, right? This one's also very important. Prep, cleanup, and money, right? You're kind of the classroom management piece, the control we usually have over the class. There's a little bit of a risk element here, right? It's going to feel a little bit looser, and that for some people, right, is going to raise other challenges. What direction is it going to go in? You thought you allotted four classes for this. All of a sudden, this project is going to take 2 weeks. You don't have 2 weeks to give. It gives you more freedom, right? More engaging. That's a great opportunity. But challenges again, right? You're spending time working with a group, right? Can be hard for kids. I love this idea. You can give different students a chance to shine. Limited time, right? Again, the challenges of skills, especially with Hebrew, or teaching Tanakh, teaching Bible. But here's another, we'll end with another opportunity. Students can actually see what you're talking about. So I think some of the common denominators, and we're really gonna come back to all of these as we go through the presentation, we'll have a chance to discuss, is that on one hand, there's a lot of opportunities, right? It can bring students in, it can make it exciting, it can make it relevant, it can engage students who have diverse learning needs, right? Students who might not traditionally excel or love traditional classroom learning, but are very artistic or are very creative or very musically inclined, all of a sudden might have avenues where they're brought in, where they're excited, where they feel their talents are recognized. But there's some very real challenges that we want to name as well. Whether it's a curricula where we don't have a lot of choice over it, whether it's limited time, whether it's our comfort level, whether it's worrying that the class is a little bit going to go off the rails, right, with this, and where is it exactly going to lead? So all of these are definitely challenges that we want to be addressing and we want to be thinking about and we want to be naming. So thank you everyone for that, and we're going to come back to that as we go through it. So with that, the last piece before we jump into the research and the best practices is there are a lot of challenges, and we've discussed, we've seen those, we've named them, we're going to address them. But I also wanted to lean in now a little bit more to the opportunities, and I love these comics, and I'll invite you really to post in the chat anything you notice about these comics, about these comic strips, about kind of the messages that are being conveyed here, and if this feels relevant to you, if this feels like something that resonates with your students and kind of how they're viewing their education or they're viewing Judaic studies, definitely feel free to take a moment to look through these comics to post in the chat. But as people do that, I'll share, I love these comics. I used to put them on my tests when I taught Talmud, to kind of reinforce a little bit or kind of nudge the students. Because sometimes, I found, the more experiential learning that I did, and we'll talk about how to break it down, can often be rigorous, or if not more rigorous sometimes than the regular learning. A lot of times when I would do some projects, which I'll share at the end, students would say to me kind of in a joking way, "Oh, Miss Gordon, you ruined it. Like, it was going to be so fun. We're going to do a game, but now there's an assessment, or now there's a reflection piece, and there's always elements to make it serious. But at the same time, I think there's this approach that our students have that they see education as regurgitating information, right? I'll give over the information as a teacher, the students memorize it, they spit it back, that's it. Everything is done, everything's been accomplished. And chaval, really, right? It's such a waste, because education is there to inspire students, especially with Judaic studies. So that's really kind of, as kind of like a starting point when we think of opportunities, how can experiential education within the world of Judaic studies really be a hook that we can use to get us out of these type of paradigms and get us out of these frameworks and really inspire real authentic learning? And here another quote over here, right, from John Dewey, this idea of when we give students something to do, not something to learn, Then learning will naturally happen, right? We don't want that comic strip of kind of the information being dumped onto the students. We want them to experience something, and we want to watch the excitement in class as learning naturally happens. And I want to really give three examples from research, and then we're going to shift into the challenges, the best practices, giving the practical examples over here. But I wanted to share just a few examples over here of research that I think can be helpful. Really helpful framings for us to keep in mind when we're considering what aspects of experiential education we can bring in to the Judaic Studies classroom and why. So number one, and many people might be familiar with this, but this over here is Dale's cone of experience. And the idea over here, if you look through the cone, and people probably here are familiar with this in different ways, is that the more engaged the students are in the learning process, the better the retention is going to be, the better the excitement is going to be, the more engaged they're going to be. And what's interesting here, and this is kind of the newer piece I wanted to add, is I think sometimes when people think experiential learning, or they think that, oh, I'm going to engage kids a little bit more in the classroom, what are we going to do? We're going to watch a video, right? We're not just going to move a book, we're going to lift it up. And I say this a little bit tongue in cheek because in my current job, I work for a media company and we make a lot of videos, but we also make resources as well. But one of the things we always say when we're doing training around the videos that we produce is please don't just show the video. Please don't show the whole video, show it well. But I think over here, it's that same idea that there's reading, there's watching something, but where we want students to be is towards the bottom of this cone. We want them to do some sort of visit. We want them to do, and someone said this in the chat before, right? A dramatic presentation. We want them to simulate a real experience. And the ideal is we want them to do the real thing. And all of this, again, is going to pull students in and engage them there. The more that we can engage them in getting them active and getting them experiencing or simulating the real experience, the more it's going to have an impact. So that's really the first piece over here. And the second piece over here, also, when we think about experiential education, we have to talk really here about David Kolb and his idea over here of the learning cycle. And this, I think, is a key piece. And a few people mentioned this in the chat before, but the idea that the experience itself cannot live alone. It's not enough. And I feel that, back when I was in the day school, I used to present sometimes at teacher lunch and learns, or people would come to me and ask me about different experiences that they could do in the classroom with their students. And what I often saw kind of the go-to for teachers was, we're going to do this really creative, this really thoughtful experience, and then we're done. We did it, and it was amazing. And they stopped in kind of the blue aspect over here, right? The concrete experience. The students had the experience. It was great that they had an experience, right? We're working our way down Dale's cone, of engagement that we saw before. But here, it's not really enough to have an experience. I remember there was one school that had done a very beautiful Hakhnasat Sefer Torah, kind of a welcoming of a new Torah scroll ceremony, and they involved students in it, and they had students, take different roles, and they danced, the Torah down and put it in the Aron, and they put it in the Ark. And then, great, everyone go to period five, right? And I remember hearing about that, and many schools have done something similar. And on one hand, that's an amazing experience for students to go through. But I think what we want to be pushing ourselves to do when we think about crafting authentic experiential education and bringing it to the Judaic Studies classroom is we don't want to stop at the concrete experience. And I'll give some practical examples as we go later on. We want there to also be the reflection. We want there then to be the abstract conceptualization. We want the students to have a chance to think, what did I learn from this experience? And finally, active experimentation. Now, what's the difference? What's the impact? How can I try what I learned into something new? And these are steps that I think I'm going to give some, when we get to best practice, we'll talk about kind of an outline. But I think this is really going to be key to really bringing us to the experience part of what's going on. And the last piece of research that I wanted to show over here, finally, over here was multiple intelligences. And someone mentioned this before also in the chat, or maybe in the Mentimeter, but another important piece when we're thinking about how to build out experiential education, especially for Judaic studies, is to think about the different learners we have in the class, right? How can we raise the level, or I don't want to say raise the level, I'll kind of frame it as kind of adding different lenses onto it, right? That there's kind of, we might be doing something that involves journaling or writing. Is there a way that we can do something with this experience that can be more tactile? Is there something with this assignment that there can be a musical outlet or there can be a creative drama element? How can we kind of think about the different intelligences and the different talents that our students have and make sure that all of this is kind of being harnessed and being brought into the classroom? So we did so far. We outlined some of the challenges, the opportunities. We had a chance to look at not just a definition of experiential education, but really where the research is coming from and three different kind of framings from research that should really be in our minds as we're putting together different assignments, different projects. But as we get into the tachlis, as we get into kind of the practical, I wanted to circle back a little bit to the challenges and opportunities and almost have this kind of chart, helpful chart that I put together over here of kind of what I saw or you know, thought I would see, expected to see from your responses and how we might answer them. Because I think all of the challenges are true, but what we're seeing from the research is that there really is such an advantage to bringing experiential education to the classroom, especially to Judaic studies. But how can we make sure that we're naming and really responding to those challenges? So, number one, the idea of taking away class time is very real. But one thing I think we want to keep in mind is how much students are going to remember, right, at the end of the day from our classroom, going back to Dale's cone of experience. And I would say, and you know, feel free to push back, but I would argue that what you invest from taking away class time, you will make back in the way students remember this experience, reflect on it, and really have it as a core educational memory. Number two, I think, is there's this idea or this fear that class will become less serious. And that's something that I'm going to give you very practical tools when we think about examples that really experiential learning or projects can definitely have a lot of rigor. They should not equal chaos. And they should be very structured. There should be a lot of formal learning. It doesn't mean that we're not doing text. It doesn't mean that there aren't also assessments or, you know, assignments and a certain formality. But it's not just kind of a free-for-all, that we have to structure it so it doesn't feel like a less serious class. Not my comfort zone 100%. I would say two things to this. Number one, I think modeling, trying, and failing forward is really important for students, and naming before an assignment that, hey, this is something new that I thought I would try with you. And it's an experiment, and we're going to see how it goes. And I think kind of showing that with our students is valuable. I would also say, and we're going to come back to this, that successful teaching has to feel authentic. And the goal of experiential education and Judaic studies, the goal I would say also of our learning together tonight is not that you go home and you throw out your curricula and now every single thing you do is going to be experiential. But I think it's the idea of what can I tweak in a way that feels authentic to me. I think as educators, we want to model what we want to do with our students, right? We want to be stretching a little bit out of our comfort zones, but not so far out of our comfort zones that we can't feel authentic. We can't feel like we can function. I remember the first time I did a program through what's now called M Squared. They had a certificate program for experiential education. Back in the day, it actually used to be run out of Yeshiva University. So I was in kind of the original iteration of it. And one of the seminars where they brought all the fellows together to kind of learn about how to actually do experiential education was they provided a lot of lumber and string and a lot of supplies, and they had us build an A-roof, and they had us build kind of the strings and the different kind of items that you put up in order to kind of create a sort of boundary so you can carry on Shabbat. And obviously, there are a lot of Jewish laws that get very, very in depth about this, but they wanted us to play around with it. And I remember I was, you know, teaching high school at the time, and I was like, this is amazing. I'm going to go back and do this with my students. And then I thought about, you know, what happens when I try to, you know, work on my family's sukkah and walking into Home Depot. And I'm like, this is not the activity for me unless I can have my father-in-law, you know, on speed dial for the entire process. And that's okay. And I think the idea that, you know, what's going to look like a successful experience for one person is going to be different than someone else, right? For some people, they're going to go to Home Depot, they're going to buy it out, they're going to have their students build, you know, sukkahs that match different descriptions in the Mishnah, and that's amazing. For someone else, it might be we're going to be baking, we're going to do something that is making challah, we're going to do something that is, you know, separating dough that brings up different ideas, and those are two, you know, very, very kind of range of experiences. But you have to do something that is within your comfort level that doesn't feel like too much of a stretch, because I think otherwise you're you want this to be something that's going to feel successful to you too. You want this to be an experiment that you can build on and continue on. And that gets the second last one here of, people will say, listen, I'm not creative. That's not who I am. I'm not a creative person. I don't want to do this. And I would say, not a problem. There are very creative te people, in your school, in your institution, perhaps in the Hidden Sparks network. You can put together a PLC, professional learning community. You can connect with other people, and you can learn from others. So definitely feel free to, you could take most of my ideas. I'm happy, we'll share it out after. But really to work with other people to kind of combine that. And finally, and this one I added for Judaic studies specifically, I think that for many, there's this idea that Judaic studies is very high stakes, right? We're trying to help students connect to their Jewish identity. We want them to have a real kind of core literacy in our texts, in our tradition. And there should be a seriousness for this. There should be a rigor. And is it almost disrespectful, to all of a sudden be bringing in games? And I wanna, I hear that, but I would counter again that we don't want to lose sight of the forest for the trees. The ultimate goal is that students are passionate about their Jewish identity. They're passionate about traditions, about texts, about their heritage. And if we can do this in a way that speaks to them, that brings them in, that engages them, then that's the ball game. And that's really what we're going through. And the two kind of main points I shared at the end is, number one, experiential methods should enhance and not replace learning. There's always going to be core learning. We're not throwing out our curricula, and that there should always be accountability for experiential learning. So what does that look like? We've done a lot of build up, and I want to give you some very tachlis, some very practical examples, and I want to give you a framework that I always use when I'm putting things together. Number one is going to be when you're sitting there and thinking about what lesson you want to put together in an experiential way. And I see people are putting comments. I'm going to address that. Great questions. Number one, you want to define your goals. You want to really think carefully about what you're trying to do. And I'll talk more about that in a second. Number two is reflection and rigor. Those are the two kind of cores of building this experience. There needs to be reflection. There needs to be rigor. We're not sacrificing either of those. And the third one, kind of a little bit of what I mentioned a little bit before, that we want to move away from frontal teaching, but you want this to be something that feels manageable. It doesn't feel overwhelming. So how do we do this? Defining our goals, reflection and rigor, moving away from frontal teaching in a manageable way. So let's talk about defining our goals first. What are you trying to do? So for some people, experiential education or where you're going to bring in experiential education is going to be at the beginning of the lesson. You're looking for a trigger, you're looking to get kids' attention, you're looking to do something exciting before we delve into text. And that's totally fine. Some examples of this that I've seen done or that I've done. One that I think is always excellent, can always bring students in. You kind of put a basically give students a list of different values. You can print these out, you can cut them out. I would say the core of experiential education is always having a good pair of scissors. There's going to be a little bit of, cutting and pasting going on, but giving students in different groups different cards or different items, and asking them, it could be put these values in order. For example, let's say you give them a list of Jewish values and you ask them in every group, put them in order of most important to least important. Or you pick character traits, midot, and you ask different groups to choose what are the most important to you? What are the three that are most important? Or you're talking about leadership and you put pictures of different and diverse leaders and divide students into groups and you ask them to choose, what are the most important leaders to you? And then each group can present. That's one example. Another one is a gallery walk. I always used to have these in my class, those giant post-it notes, you can kind of stick around the classroom. You put prompts up. And again, frontally, you could ask students a question. You could have a class discussion, or you can have them get up from their seats, walk around the room, and respond to prompts to kick off a topic you're learning, right? Let's say you're learning the biblical story of, Yaakov and Esav, where Yaakov is taking the blessings, right, from Esav. So you could put different prompts around the room, have you ever done anything where you felt you didn't do it in the right way? Or do you feel, or bigger questions, is it possible for the avot and the imahot, the forefathers and foremothers, to sin? And kind of if you, depending how far you want to push it, but different questions have people walk around the room using different things online, Mentimeter, Padlet, Think, Pair, Share, which people said. These are all great opportunities to kick off a lesson in a way that's experiential. I will say though, I think if we're thinking about the cone of experience, these aren't too far down, right? I would say this is kind of experiential education light. That's not a bad thing, right? But this is one way of doing things, is to say, hey, I have my traditional lesson, but I want to kick it off in a way with a bang, and kick it off with students getting around the room, thinking in a different way. These are all ways to kind of add a little more interactive teaching. The next level, I would say, though, is where it's not the trigger, but the experiential lesson is really the core part of what you're doing with students in your time together. And here I would give three examples. I'm going to give now, we'll get to the practical. I'm going to share my screen, different things that I've done in the past: role-playing games, bringing a concept to life, or trips. And these are ways, I think, really where we're not just doing a trigger, but the core part of the learning is really this. And I want to kind of outline with you how I did this. So, role-playing games, just trying to remember. Oh, here we go. I've remembered that I have my list up here. Here we go. I want to give a few examples over here, and I'm going to share other aspects that I pulled up on my screen. But first, I really want to direct your attention to the bottom, which is really, I would say, whenever I was building anything out, anything that was experiential, there were three parts to it. There was the pre-work, right? That's, and again, sometimes it was an interactive trigger. That's great. But the pre-work means that it still feels very much like a traditional classroom, right? When I was a Talmud teacher and I was teaching Talmud, there's textual learning, right? We're going to be learning the sugya. We're going to be learning that section of the Talmud. If we were doing a Tanakh class, a Bible class, we're going to learn the psukim, we're going to learn the verses, we're going to learn the commentators. There's a rigor that's given to it, where there's the pre-work. Before we have an experience, you have to have the context and the background, so it still kind of feels like a traditional class. Then there's going to be the experience, whether that's the role-playing game, wherever the learning is coming to life in an experiential way. And then the third piece, which is key, and we like to say this in my other job here now at Unpacked for Education, we like to say learning without reflection never happened, right? You need to have that core piece of reflection. And I think here that's key if we're going to keep a certain seriousness and a certain rigor to the class. So I'm going to give you an example of a game I did with my 12th graders and my Anode about tithes, about Truma and Maaser, which was something that came up in a section of Gemara, a section of Talmud that we were learning. It wasn't even as connected to the core kind of sugya, the core topic that we were doing, but it felt to me to be such a rich topic to engage students with, that it was something I really wanted to experiment with. And I'm going to share over here. I'm going to switch my screen over here. And I'm going to show you those different stages. I'm actually going to go to the beginning over here. So here, the tithes, for people who aren't familiar, back in the day and time period of the Bible, right? You had to give a certain, if you were a farmer, which most people were, you had to give a certain percentage of your crops to the priests. There were different priests. Some of them went to the Kohanim, some of them went to the Levi'im. And depending on this, different cycle of years, there was an additional tithe you were giving. Sometimes that was going to poor people, and sometimes you were able to go and redeem it and spend it in Jerusalem. So, first thing is the pre-work. And here, with everything I just said, probably sounded very confusing if you're not as familiar with it, very confusing to the students as well. So, you want to do some pre-work. So, over here, I gave my students a packet from My Jewish Learning. I gave them a section of Psukim. And the goals over here, right? Congratulations, you're a farmer living in Israel in the time period of the temple. You are going to brush up on the laws of these tithes, right? Of Truma and Maaser. And then you can eat food from your harvest. But first, you have to learn, right? So, and this was actually, I would have different graded assignments, but some of them were just like, it was like very easy to get a 10 out of 10. The only way to not get a 10 out of 10 was to not do the work, right? So again, this is again kind of like creating a certain level of rigor. So just this is very simple checking for understanding, right? Here's the 7-year cycle, right, of who you're giving it to and why. And the goal of this, the pre-work, was just making sure that, like a regular class, we're going to do a fun game, but you have to do the work first. There needs to be context. You need to actually know the context and the laws for this game to work. Then we got to the experience. So we divided students up, and this involved a lot of cutting and pasting, I will say, on my part. I think I was like the advisor of the student council, and I think I like bribed them with, chesed hours during lunch, to help me cut and paste this big project. And we divided the students up into groups, and everyone got an envelope with different pictures of kind of like wheat and barley. And I specifically set it up, and I like to do different kind of variations when it comes to these games. Some kids got a lot, And some kids with their farms got very little. And that was very purposeful because that was something I was going to come back to in the reflection after. So I think when you're building the experience, you want to think about for me, it's always about what are we going to have? What are we going to discuss in the discussion afterwards? What are the values that are going to come up? What are pieces of an experience I can talk about? So some kids got more, some kids got little. And that was important. I had this big blow up dice. Kids would kind of roll dice. And depending on what number it rolled on, what year of the cycle it was, kids had to take from their harvest. And I actually had students who, from their family, said, oh, I'm actually from a Cohen family or I'm from a Levy family. They actually did not participate, they stood separate. And kids had to get up and bring them a kind of their tithes, like their food as part of the game. And then as the game went on, and kids were doing that, different things would happen. If I would tell them, oh, now it's, this number year and we have to give to the poor people. There was a bin, you had to go give to the poor people. When there was a, I put up like a little, I called it a Shuk Yerushalayim, like a Jerusalem market for the year where you have to take your tithes and go to Jerusalem. And I put out basically like lollipops and dum-dums and they could go kind of cash it in. And they basically also, and the last piece was they had to map out how far their farm was. Each of them got a location in Israel, how far it would take them. And I had them use Google Maps and walking, how long it would take them in buildable times to get to Jerusalem. Why did I have them do all of that? And really, my goal always was reflection. And here we get kind of to the different reflection questions, and I'll pull a couple of them out. And obviously, you can tweak these. And I think for any type of assignment, always be thinking about reflection. For me, I had a few different ideas. Number one, as I mentioned before, some kids got a lot and some kids got a little. And I wanted them to reflect on that. What did it feel like to give really charity, right, when you didn't have so much to begin with, right? Was that hard? Was that easy? What does it say about a society when even when you don't have so much, you're required to give? And then I asked the students who were from the Levy and the Cohen families, what did it feel like to not really be part of the game and to have to receive, and be recipients? What did that feel like? Right. And what was that experience like? And we got to some really interesting discussions in the class where, on one hand, it's a game about tithes from ancient biblical times. But I think if we think about questions of affluence and questions of responsibility in society and what it means to be sometimes have to receive help and sometimes what it means to give help, these are very rich. Kind of, I would say, essential questions that traverse time, that were really an important discussion and reflection. Finally, the idea of having them map out how long it took them to get to Israel to walk, I didn't even have to say it. One student said, like, raised their hand. They're like, oh my God, that would take like a month of walking. Why would I ever, when would I ever go? And I felt like that was a key piece here when we think about, the pilgrimages that you're supposed to go in biblical times to visit Jerusalem 3 times a year, this idea for students, to realize, well, that actually would have been really hard to do all the time. And I wonder if I would have gone all the time. Like, these are things that I think if we had just learned the text may have come out, but giving them this experience, giving them this time, this chance to reflect really kind of changed the aspect of it and made it much more real. And I'll just go back to hear over that's and again this was I did this with a high school class, and I want to give a elementary school example as well. And I think of, let's say you're learning, the topic of Abraham and Sarah welcoming guests, and the chapter in the Bible of the angels come and everyone's rushing to prepare. And I think here also, this is something which you still can divide between pre-work experience and reflection. Number one, there's the pre-work. You have to learn the story, right, of Abraham and Sarah, what actually happens in that story of welcoming guests, the hustle and bustle of putting together Abraham being tired, in pain, but he still tries to welcome the guests. You can start it off, with asking students, what did do you think this took a lot of work? Do you think this took a little work? Ask them, share a time when you had guests. Was that a When is it a fun experience? And what are there aspects that are also difficult? And once you've kind of learned that text, kind of engaged a little bit with that topic, you can have the experience. And I've seen this actually with my daughter's class has done this when they've learned different topics around this, where the class basically prepares to host guests and they invite another class in to their class and they prepare kind of a party before, and you the students are divided up and every group is given a different task. It could be to prepare the food, to prepare the snacks. It could be to make welcome signs. It could be to bring in extra chairs. And everyone is really involved in this experience of welcoming guests. And then you actually welcome another class in. You have kind of a fun party. That's the experience. And then again, reflection. Asking students, and especially I would say over here, going back to Kolb's, chart, where we want to get to the abstract conceptualization. We want to get to the active experimentation. And again, this could be with very little kids, but you're able to ask them, what was that experience like? What did it feel like to prepare for guests? And then the guests actually came. What was really fun about it? What was challenging about it? Now, how might you view welcoming guests a little bit differently because of that experiment? And that's really a question I love to ask students of all ages, of kind of like, what's different now? What's changed because of this experiment? And I think here, really, these are just two examples, and I can talk about more as well. I just want to pause if anyone has questions or comments in the chat. But again, this idea of there has to be the pre-work, there has to be the rigor, there's the experience that the students are going through, but there also needs to be that very powerful reflection piece, because that's how we're moving students from the experience to the learnings that they can apply to new environments. So I'll pause if people have comments, questions on this, they'd like to post in the chat, and I'll give a few more examples. I'll name also, I saw people said over here, right, using, available spaces and materials for sure. And the idea, which I think is very important, right, passive learning doesn't work for all kids, right? And we don't want to leave kids behind. And I always find, when I experimented with different, games like this or different, role playing, that the students who were sometimes the least engaged in the formal learning all of a sudden perked up. And then because they went through this experience, we're really able to share in the reflection, whether it's that, comment I said before about, going to Jerusalem, like, and how often they might go, or really this idea of what it means to kind of receive and not give if you were that Levi, standing on the side, or for someone who, is putting together all this work to host guests and then thinking about, wow, like that was really hard. That must have been very hard for Avraham, and how to structure that. Okay, people have more comments. Feel free to throw them in. I'll give maybe one more example in this realm, and then we'll jump to the next one. The last one over here, and I played around with project-based learning also. This one was a little bit project-based learning light, I would say. It didn't fit exactly into the rubric. But a number of years ago, this was right before there were elections in Jerusalem in Israel. So not the Knesset elections, not the national elections. These were municipal elections in Jerusalem. And I actually am gonna, I this is actually, people might have used this in the past. There's a Qohelet, used to have a database over here, still does, of different kind of entries people could submit or different experiential learning. So this was kind of the assignment that I did over here. And again, this is high school, but I think it can always be scaled down in this sense for younger students as well. But I just wanted to talk to see another example of those three. There's the pre-work, there's the experience, and there's the reflection. So over here, I gave students, I divide them up into different groups, and I gave them each candidates for the Jerusalem elections. What I loved about the Jerusalem elections was it was much more, a little bit more diverse, I would say, than kind of with unique aspects that perhaps students didn't know about, especially with some of the Arab-Israeli individuals that were actually running in these elections, and kind of gave a chance to explore some of the different minority groups in Israel. I know this is, expanding a little bit, of Judaic studies, but if you think about if you want to do this in other aspects, and I'll give some examples at the end, the way I divided it up over here was we started off first, right, with walking around the class, doing kind of a chalk walk, getting kids engaged in it. Then I had them put together a survey, right? What do you think are going to be the most pressing issues to potential voters in the Jerusalem elections? And then students would watch campaign videos and they got to student voice of choice choose which candidate they wanted to promote in their campaign. There was a publicly presented project and accountability. Everyone took turns basically presenting in class. And there was a very kind of rigorous, and this I would say for anything you're doing with role playing, where students in different groups are exploring different characters. This could be acting out different things from Tanakh, from the Bible. This could be acting out different things in Jewish history. You want to act out, the disputation, of the Ramban and various people that he's debating, and all of these things. Coming back to that question of how do you make it serious? I think one point that can really be very helpful over there to add that rigor is rubrics. You always want to make the accountability very, very clear with anything that you're doing with students that's going to be a game, it's going to be informal. It's not just the pre-work, but even the experience, anything that they're putting together, you want to be very clear on what they have to submit to keep that level of rigor. And then obviously, there always needs to be a debrief, there always needs to be that piece of reflection. The second thing to kind of shift gears a little bit is bringing a concept to life. You don't always have to do a huge game that's taking over the class. I'll give a few examples over here. One line that we learned when we were in my Talmud class was mitzvah bo yoter mishlicho, the idea that it's better to do a mitzvah yourself than through an agent. So that's something that's a concept they're learning. We were engaging in this concept in a rigorous way. We were learning the text, we were learning commentators, but then I had students act it out. And over the weekend, their homework was to basically think of a mitzvah that maybe they might usually have someone else do on their behalf or have someone else take care of, and to step up, do it themselves. And then they had to write a journal entry of what this experience was like for them. So again, this doesn't have to be so high stakes, but that made our discussion on Monday much richer because we didn't just talk in an abstract way, but we had students actually try to bring this concept to life, and then we were able to break down that discussion. Number two, I've never done this, but I've seen this done in a number of different schools when learning Yirmiyahu, and you could do this for younger grades also around Rosh Hashanah, around Yom Kippur, and it's one of the different piyutim, one of the different poems that we say in the Machzor, the idea of this imagery of us in the hands of God, like clay in the hands of the potter, right? Kechomer b'yad hayotzer. And I've seen this with different Tanakh teachers that they'll bring in clay, or if the school has an art room, right? Being able to kind of go to the art room and have students create something, right? Using clay, using pottery, and then talk about how is the imagery now of this piyut, of this poem, when we say this on Rosh Hashanah, we say this on Yom Kippur, how is this different now? How does this feel different? And again, this goes to not just the experience, it goes to the multiple intelligences. We're bringing in kind of an art aspect, an aspect that's really tangible. It's, tactile. Students are literally getting their hands dirty, but it raises that level of reflection, that level of discussion when they've been able to physically experience it. And finally, I saw this. I was doing a tour of a school of Yavne in New Jersey. And actually, a former student of mine at Maya Notes was now the eighth grade teacher. So it was a nice kind of moment of nachas for me. And what she was doing, and I wanted to, mention this over here, was they'd just been learning the debate. Was Noah righteous? That he would have been as righteous in any other generation, or was he only righteous in his generation? And she had this being done with eighth graders. I think you could do this for younger students as well. She divided students up. They had to research it. They were on, either team A or team B, and then they had to have a debate. And something I thought was very interesting was she actually brought in the administrators, the principal, and students had to present not to her, but to the administrators. And I think that's another level of rigor, another level of accountability, but one that, brings this concept to life that you're researching it. Now you have to argue it. And I would say 100% in a debrief about that, I would always ask students, what did you think personally at the beginning? What was your opinion about Noah? Now that did you argue what you believed, or did you argue the opposite? And now have your opinions changed, either because you played devil's advocate or because you heard your friend say something else that kind of sparked something in your mind? So obviously, again, that goes back to, I think someone said before, think, pair, share. But you don't always have to do such a huge experience to just tinker a little bit for students to be able to not just think frontally, but to go through it in a way that feels experientially. And the last thing I'll say over here are trips. And trips, I often feel, are such a wasted experience. And what do I mean by wasted experience? I feel like a lot of times schools will do these incredible trips. They'll do chesed trips where people will go to a food pantry, or they'll go to volunteer at an old age home. Beautiful, trips that are very powerful. And you sign up for the bus. You do the trip, you come home, and you come back and you go back to class, and we're done. Period nine, now it's time for math. And I think going back to the outline we've shared before, here you have an actual experience the students are going through. Don't let it just be an experience. Let's think about scaling it up and down. What's the pre-work going to be? Before the students go out to do, I gave this example of Chesed trips. Before the students go out, can we get them to learn a text together about volunteering? Can we have kind of a prompt about it? And then afterwards, can we take, we've already taken maybe three periods to do this trip. Can we take half of the next period to just have students in the next class do a few reflection questions and to really reflect on that experience? Because again, it gets you moving a little bit more along that learning cycle. So we spoke so far, and I want to leave time for questions as well. We spoke so far about the idea of how to do pre-work, how to have the experience, how to think about not just our goals, but applying rigor. And the last kind of piece over here, we spoke about reflection and rigor throughout. I just wanted to name a few elements of it. Number one, as we said before, learning about reflection never happens. Reflection can happen in many different ways. It could be written, you could have Google Forms. It doesn't have to be, such like a expanded, workload. It could be if you want it to be. But just having students do one thing to reflect. It could be a Google form, it could be a discussion. I used to do in some of my classes exit interviews. Kids had to sit with me for a little bit and I would have a conversation with them. It really allows them to reflect and apply this learning to new experiences. And again, as I said before, with rigor, experiential learning does not mean that there's no assessment. There 100% should be an assessment. It could be a test, but it also could be anything that just holds students accountable in a different way. That's why I said before, graded rubrics, I think over here are key. I personally love using portfolios, instead of grading, if you're in a more formal environment that allows students to choose what parts of different experiences they want to highlight. But just naming again that experiential learning does not mean that we don't hold students accountable and we don't have a certain amount of rigor. Okay, the last piece that I really wanted to mention this, we spoke about being clear about our goals. We spoke about the idea of reflection and rigor, and finally, moving away from frontal teaching in a manageable way. This really brings us all the way back to what I said at the beginning, which is that doing this has to feel authentic to you. And I think kind of the best advice I ever got before going on my first experience, my first education conference, I think one of the presenters had this at the conference, was don't come back from a conference or an experience or a webinar or a professional development learning and suddenly try to do everything, because you're not going to, right? It's even like an idea expressed, I think, in the Mishnah, right? Tafasa meruvah lo tafasa. You try to grab too much, you're not going to grab anything at all. But really, this idea of thinking, what's one or two things that I can implement from what I learned from into what I do? And I would say over here, if you're already at this webinar, you're interested in doing experiential education, you're already probably doing it in different elements in your class. I would encourage you to kind of ask the following questions when you're designing lessons, because you're not going to change everything and not everything is going to be experiential. But number one, when you're planning your lessons, to think about how can this lesson get students further along Dale's cone of experience, right? Is there anything? It doesn't always have to be jumping to the bottom where they're actually, reenacting it, but can I get them a little bit further down? Can all of these things move slightly further down? Number two, do I have to be at the front of the classroom? Can students be doing this? And to always be asking, and sometimes you have to be, and sometimes you have to do the framing, but sometimes, do I have to be here? Can this be something students can do? And finally, what alternate methods can I integrate into this class, into this lesson? And when I did this fellowship back in the day at M Square, they actually gave us these cards, which now my kids just play with, but they were very helpful. They were cards about different modalities and they had them in different colors. And they encouraged us, when you're lesson planning, to think about how can I add a level of music? How can I add a level of art? How can I add a level of creative writing? Where are the different, multiple intelligences? How can I kind of make sure we're playing to everyone in the classroom? And finally, as I said before, Rome wasn't built in a day. How can we change, one lesson that you're going to do next semester, or adapt one to two aspects of these lessons? Experiment, tinker, try it, and then take it from there. So with that, I wanted to pause for reflection so we can, try to model what we're teaching over here. We said again our best practices for success. We outlined them, defining your goals, reflection, rigor, moving away from frontal teaching in a manageable way. And I'd love for people to post in the chat, and then we'll conclude, wrap up, and I'll take questions. What is something that resonated for you from the different aspects that I shared tonight? And what is something you are still wondering? And we'll take a few minutes for people to post in the chat. What are kind of things on your mind? What are you wondering? what's resonated with you, what's something you might be excited to try, and we'll give everyone a few moments to think about that. So we'll model some wait time over here. But if people wanna post, wanna think about something that I shared that resonated, something that you're excited to try. Oh, here we go. Great. So points to people who are posting. I jumped the gun a little bit over here. All right. So I was gonna read and share some of these over here. So over here, Rivka is saying, I think the question of does it need to be or can my students do this feels very powerful, right? Thinking about if we're doing this or not. Is there a way to do experiential learning, teach the text, or right, does there always have to be pre-learning and then the experience? That's great. And I would say, I think it's a really good question. And I think that, this formula is very fluid and you can tinker with it and see what works for you, what works for your students. Going through it also. Right. What does it mean to give time to reflect? I think you 100% can do it on a different day, and make it kind of a serious. Also, someone posted before about Socratic seminar. Right, you can really make it kind of a accountable experience of what this discussion and what this reflection is going to be. Allowing more reflection time is key. I also sometimes feel like, oh, there's no time. And I do this on, in presentations. Oh, we're just going to skip the reflection, and I have to remind myself, no, the reflection is the most important part, right, of what you want to be doing with students, allowing them to make those connections, right? And so over here, the importance of reflection, the Dale's cone of experience, right? Incrementally moving it along, 100% the challenge of time, and we're always being torn about this, right? Creative examples, right? Role play. I have a kindergartner, I would say, my daughter, and she absolutely loves role playing when we learn Parsha together. So I would say 100%, to do that. She went to school the other day with a paro hat because they did, a special party for finishing Bereshit, and we were doing paro, not for Shemot, for Yosef, but it works in both books. But I think this is also a really good idea, right, to how to bring, right, the idea that rigor still applies. And I think also this last question also is a good one, right? How much of it is applicable to students with learning disabilities? I'll say that I spent a significant amount of my teaching in day schools was with what we said, I guess what we would call like the bridge class or kind of a lower track of students who did struggle with learning difficulties. And I went back and forth because, and I think it's just an important thing to name. So thank you, Rivka, for bringing that up. That for some students, when we did these experiential big games, for certain students who have different learning disabilities and have taught to learn and stay organized in a direct way, when you go off script, quote unquote, it can be very difficult for them. So I found sometimes that being very intentional of what groups I was putting them in, making sure that, doing differentiating instruction with if there was a written reflection after for students who struggle with abstract thinking, I would actually give them different questions. Like their questions would kind of be like, what happened? What did you think? And we didn't go so deep for them, but that was really what they needed because for them to jump to the abstract was very complicated. They needed something that was a little bit more, going back to that carton, I don't want to say spit back, but they just needed to kind of clarify, this is what we learned. Now I can say it back. And I was able to push them a little bit, but I think you have to really be cognizant of that. So I really appreciate that. And people also, right, thinking about tech study, connecting that to Chesed trips as well. I wanted to end with one of my favorite pieces of Gemara, a selection of the Talmud over here, which is a story over here from Rav Yeshua ben Chananya, where he's walking and he is trying to figure out what road he should take. And he sees a young boy who's kind of sitting there at the crossroads. I'll just say this outside for the sake of time. And he asks him, like, how do I get to the city? And the boy turns to him and says, well, there's one path is short and long, and the other path is long and short. Right. And he's like, well, I'm going to go with the short one. And he goes there and he ends up kind of like super, super lost and tangled. And he goes back to the boy. And he's like, what? Why did you send me in that way? You thought you said it was short. And he's like, no, It's short, but it's also long. But really, perhaps what you should have done is gone on the path that was long, but was really short. And I think that, something that I always try to remind myself of as an educator is that the long path can ultimately, quote unquote, be short. That putting in the effort and, doing kind of the more difficult setup of an experience that's going to mean a lot of cutting and pasting, or it's going to mean a lot of differentiating between your students, and it's going to mean a lot more work than just teaching a text and having them do a spit back, multiple choice test, or setting up a rubric for what it looks like to really do reflection well is a lot of work. But I would say that ultimately, if our goal, especially in Judaic studies, as we said before, is to connect and inspire our students when it comes to our tradition and our texts, we want the long road. We don't want shortcuts, and we want to make sure that we're doing this in a clear way. So thank you so much again to Rabbi Huss and to Hidden Sparks. My email is on the screen, sygordon@gmail.com. You can get it from Rabbi Huss as well. And if anyone wants to reach out to talk more, I'm always happy to talk shop about experiential education. And thank you to all of you for coming out tonight and for being the people on the front lines with our students, thinking about how to engage them in more creative ways.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah, for your enlightening and very helpful presentation. I'm sure that everyone here learned many things they can apply to their lives and the lives of their students and in their classrooms. I know I certainly did. And thank you all for joining us. Please share your feedback on our survey that will pop up after the webinar. We read each and every response and appreciate your taking the time to fill it out.